after the Week 7 action. How's it going, man?
Oh, man, pretty good. Pretty disappointed with this week's outcome, but I think we needed it going into the bye.
Yeah, this this week was definitely a tough pill to swallow. I think last week, playing the Chargers, how good the team looked, they looked as equally bad this week as they look. You know, it was a completely different team. It seemed like that they put out there for the Week 7 matchup for against the Bengals.
Yeah, no doubt. Everybody seemed to come out flat-footed and kind of flat in general. You know, people weren't making tackles. Lamar was just sailing balls left and right. It just, like you said, was a mirror opposite of what, you know, the game looked like the week previous. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, let's jump right into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead. I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head for me. My biggest takeaway from this one on the offensive side of the ball was definitely Lamar. I thought he didn't look as poised as he has in recent weeks. I thought he sailed a lot of balls. I think a couple throws got away from him there, especially early. But I actually put a post up on social after the game. Lamar had last in the game on Sunday, he had about 3.25 seconds to throw and got sacked 5 times. On the flip side of that, Joe Burrow had about 2.7 seconds to throw and only got sacked once. And it really posed a question for me. That's one of the stats that I look at for offensive line play is the time to throw. And actually all season, Lamar's been tied for the top in terms of that stat, which I think is a little misleading because obviously he's a mobile quarterback and kind of and can move and scramble and create more time than, you know, Tom Brady or somebody obviously not as mobile. But what do you think about that? What did you see yesterday? Am I blowing smoke here, or do you kind of agree with me a little bit?
No, there's some agreements that I could be have there in general. But I mean, you also alluded to the fact that with him being such a playmaker, I guess you could say, and being able to make things happen on the run or in the pocket. I mean, he kind of has that time allotted. Granted, you know, he was clutching the ball a little bit too long, and then also just looking at the tape. I mean, I kind of wanted to see downfield in those 5 sacks. You know, aside from the ones where he ran into his lineman, who was open? I mean, you know, prior to this season, you know, last year, the year before, that was one of the big things with this receiving core. Could they route themselves open? And, you know, I mean, I know Hollywood's done a good job. I'll retract that statement. I know the team in general has done a good job, especially with bringing in those the wide receiving coaches as far as getting better with route running. But I really want to see it. I haven't got a chance to go back and look at any of the tape as far as downfield, especially on a few of those dropbacks. I mean, Lamar was 15 for 31 with 1 touchdown, no interceptions, but it just seems like he was getting pressured every play, man. I mean, Joe Burrow was getting pressured too. Let's not get it twisted. We were getting edge pressure, but it seemed like up the middle, we weren't even touching the guy. He was literally stepping up into a clean pocket on 3 right. and 5 step dropbacks, and it's like, man, we should have this guy dead to rights because he's nowhere near as good as, you know, like I said, dodging people, making people miss as Lamar Jackson is. And that's not me being, you know, Ravens brained or whatever. It's just speaking facts. I mean, he's a traditional pocket presence quarterback. I mean, he's young, so, you know, he's a little bit of mobility to him, but nowhere near as much as mobility as, you know, LJ has. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see what comes out of this bye. I think we definitely needed it. It came at the right time for us to get socked in the mouth and be able to take a break and kind of lick our wounds a bit here, especially with the injuries that we've kind of picked up here.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing too. You know, looking at it, I think we'll get a little bit healthy. You know, Pat McCary goes down, has a high ankle sprain. It was reported today. Suffered that in the second quarter of Sunday's game. And I think hopefully Nick Boyle can get back onto the practice field a little bit and come back for us here after the bye. Maybe not for the Vikings game, but hopefully soon after that. I hear Derek Wolfe is close to playing again. I think this bye will be a great opportunity for Rashad Bateman to maybe work a little bit bigger of a role into the passing game there a little bit. But I went back and watched the highlights today, which was difficult to do. Obviously, after your team gets mollywopped like that, you don't want to watch it again. But I thought it was really interesting. I wanted to go back and look at some of the pressure that Lamar was getting, and absolutely, he was under duress all day. And just to put it out there, preface it before I say what I'm gonna say. If it's any other quarterback in the league, he gets sacked 14 times. So this is not an indictment on Lamar. And certainly the offensive line needs to play better. However, the fastest sack that the Bengals recorded on Sunday was 4.4 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats. And I don't know. I think it was – it's just – He misses open reads and he runs into sacks. The play that I'm speaking of came after, I believe it was the Jamar Chase, or it was right, maybe it was the drive before the Jamar Chase touchdown. It was 20-17 at the time. It was right after the CJ, I'm going to butcher his last name. I think it's Uzama. CJ Uzama. Yeah. Am I saying that right?
Uzama. Yeah.
Touchdown where he basically just walked into the end zone. Nobody covered him, but it was a 3rd and 8 from the Ravens' 34-yard line. Lamar Jackson takes the snap, and they're rushing 7 right from the get-go. They've got a single high safety. They got 3 cornerbacks playing 8 yards off the ball. He's got Rashad Bateman on the right running a clear out route. He's got Hollywood in the slot running a little 3-yard out. He's got Mark Andrews to the left side running a little 5-yard out. And he takes the ball and he's staring Mark Andrews down. Okay, that's your primary read. As the protection starts to break down, Hollywood is on that 3-yard out. The cornerback is playing 8 yards off the ball. That ball's got to be out. You know, You look at Patrick Mahomes, you look at Joe Burrow, you look at really any other, Josh Allen's doing it. You know, his ability to recognize pressure at the line, it seems that if Lamar can't do exactly what he thought he was going to do in the huddle, he's very indecisive with making something happen. You know, he tries to roll away from the pressure, which obviously that's his shtick, right? That's what he likes to do. But I'm taking Hollywood Brown 100 times out of 100 matched up against a cornerback playing 8 yards off. You know, Hollywood could get that ball, break a tackle, and he'd still be running. Not only that, even if you don't get the first down, you're still in a position where Justin Tucker can come out, bang a field goal through, tie the game up. And for me, mentally, being in a tie ball game is a lot different than being down by 2 possessions, especially you see Lamar start doing some weird shit when it comes to him getting, you know, 10, maybe 14 points down, a couple possessions down. So he obviously takes a sack there, knocks him out of field goal range, can't tie up the game. Obviously, 3 points was not the difference today. But I think from a mentality standpoint, these were some of the decisions that he made, which were kind of uncharacteristic from him. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I get it. I mean, so this is, I think, Lamar Jackson's, I won't say downfall, but biggest, like, plus/minus. It's a double-edged sword, essentially. He's so much of a competitor that when he senses that he needs to make a play, even though he doesn't need to make the play every time, he's going to force it. And, I mean, yeah, I've played with guys like that before in the past. And, again, it's a double-edged sword because when you need to make something shake, that's the guy you want to have the ball in your hand, or ball in his hands. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely could see how I don't want to say negligent it can be, but just how, counterproductive it can be in tight moments like that. But at the end of the day, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. again, I'm not here as a blind Ravens fan. I'm just speaking facts. Without this guy, going into the bye would be probably 2-7.
Oh God, without a doubt. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Is like I don't mean this as an indictment on Lamar.
Yeah.
I also know that he's the only reason why the Ravens are 5-2 right now. He's having, in my opinion, an MVP year. It's not getting looked at. You know, Kyler Murray's what, 7-0 right now. Joe Burrow's having a great year. You know, there's a lot of great quarterback play, but Lamar consistently makes something out of nothing. It's just,
yeah.
And maybe that's more of what it is the offense puts so much pressure on him to be Superman every week. And I mean, nobody can function with that. The running backs can't get going.
I mean, if you look at just a traditional Greg Roman offense, your pistol shotgun offense, the quarterback is the bread and butter. I mean, that's how every offense should be, but there's no other features in the offense. Look at Cap.
Right.
Look at San Francisco when Roman was at the OC position there. Cap was the bread and butter, and you know, it hurt when, you know, things went left with them. And it's the same thing with Lamar. Like, Roman has centered the system, which, again, OC is supposed to center around players with an S. But it's around Lamar. So, if he's not going, no one's going.
Right, agreed. I want to transition here a minute into the running back play for the first 7 weeks. I mean, you and I both said before we started the podcast in week five that, you know, okay, well, you bring these guys in, it's going to take them a little while to get geared up, but we're week seven, man, and this shit is pitiful. Like, I don't know what, I don't know if it's a blocking scheme. The running backs are washed up. The chemistry is not there. They're in weird systems. I definitely think that's the case for Le'Veon Bell. He's not, you know, this kind of RPO option or read option, you know, runner that he's never done that before in his career. And he's definitely, I don't know if you saw him on that end around where he ended up picking up the first down, but he takes that ball and I'm sitting here looking at the screen like, dude, seriously, that's all you got? Like, that's all that's left in the tank?
I've had this discussion with you multiple times, bro. I mean, even when he was in his prime, he was not known for hitting the holes and hitting them hard or getting around the corner and hitting them hard. He tiptoes, and I will tell you, as a football player, as a coach and everything, like, fundamentally, coaches hate the way Le'Veon runs. He has great patience, don't get me wrong. But again, with him losing that burst of speed that he had years prior, it kind of just looks really bad.
Yeah.
Looking at it on tape, it's like, bro, hit the hole and run. That's all you got to do. Like, you have an extra 15 yards if you just hit the hole hard. But he likes to tiptoe. And again, for me, I started him in fantasy this week. I had some blind faith with that. With him being called up from the practice squad, you know, last week or whatever. And boy, was I wrong. All right. Well, I guess boy, was I right, but still wrong at the same time for starting him in fantasy. So I took a huge hit.
Yeah.
If I'm at my RB2.
I just don't know. I mean, what's the answer at this point? I guess we'll get into that, you know, in the last segment, but I just don't see. I don't see how they're gonna fix it, but Lamar Jackson certainly needs help. I mean, right now he's statistically, without exaggeration, about 92% of the total offense right now. I mean, he is the team, and that's just a dangerous situation to have him in, with an offensive line that's clearly struggling. You know, I won't say that they're not. It's understandable why he holds the ball so long and walks into some of these sacks because, I mean, Jesus, if he's not going to do it, who else is?
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I mean, and, you know, that's been since last season, the years before, with getting him that playmaker. I still will stand firm on this. Julio was not that playmaker he needed. I think Rashad Bateman could possibly be that, but, again, we have to see how that fits with, you know, Sammy coming back here, hopefully after the bye. and then, you know, how Sammy, Marquise Brown, and then Rashad Bateman work, and how they'll, you know, get work them into the lineup. I mean, you and I were talking about it earlier with possibly having Marquise run the three and work out of the slot.
Right.
My thing is he just is not that great of a route runner quite yet. He's definitely have the speed, so he's great to play outside. He's not physical enough for a jump ball situation, but he can be the linebacker off the line. He can run past probably 80% of the corners in the league on the outside as well. But I just don't think he has the route running ability, you know, to play that slot.
Yeah, I agree. Effectively. But he doesn't have the physicality to be outside. So I don't.
Well, yeah, and that's, I mean, Bart Scott's point about him not being a great receiver anywhere else. Lamar Jackson makes him, you know, that quarterback, I mean, that receiver, makes him that good.
Yeah, I mean,
again, he's still on pace to have a Pro Bowl season as a receiver.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. I mean, you can't take anything away from him. And just, you know, the Ravens haven't had it, that 50-50 ball, 50-50 jump ball receiver since Anquan Boldin. So, you know, that's something. Hopefully Rashad Bateman can be that, but obviously, you know, he's kind of behind the eight ball a little bit here. But, yeah, it definitely was not a banner day for the offense in terms of production, really, at any level yesterday. But I want to shift gears here a minute. Talk about the defensive side of the ball. And I'm going to let you start because I'm still a little frustrated about the performance that they had out there. I mean, what'd you see? What are your takes, man?
Poor tackling, poor, you know, coverage. It just was poor overall. I mean, the one upside is Anthony Avery didn't get used. The first half, he held his ground. I think T. Higgins was targeted 3 times in the first drive. First drive. Mm-hmm. And Avery was covering him, and he shut him down all 3 times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was an ode, and that's been his Achilles heels dating back to the Colts game with him, you know, getting out-muscled by the physical receivers. You know, he's not that big in stature, so, of course, they have the advantage. But he held his own. It was opposite. It was our big money guy who I was surprised to be, you know, to see get I don't want to say used, but
no. He gave up 250 yards. He absolutely got used. I mean, that was like prison. That was like prison love, dude. It was not good at all.
Yeah, that was between Jamar Chase and Uzomah. So it's like, you know, I don't know what the heck was going on. And then as far as the pressure, I mentioned it earlier, we were getting it on the edge. Burrow was climbing the pocket. It just seemed like we had no interior pressure.
Yeah, I completely agree. It
was the exact opposite for us on the offensive side, mm-hmm. where we, you know, Lamar was stepping up. That's one thing he was doing. He wasn't just stepping and then taking off. He was stepping up, kept his eyes downfield. It may have been to one side of the field and not working back through all of his reads, but he still had his eyes down the field, and I think that's where he got himself in trouble.
Right.
But Burrow was decisive. I mean, his receivers were just getting open, too, because a lot of the times we were getting beat. I think the two plays that we got scored on, the Chase score was we were in man, and then the one, I can't say his name either, Uzomah score, Marlon was in man as well and just got burnt by the tight end and then ran around.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
couldn't tackle. He fanned on, I mean, the touchdowns that he gave up, fanned on the tackle to Uzomah. And was that the second? I guess it was the second quarter. And then, you know, that gallop that Jamar Chase had, where, I mean, Chase broke 3 tackles there. It was just, it was not pleasing to witness.
Yeah, man. I mean, going back to last show, I kind of put it out there that Jamar Chase was deadly to watch, and he's playing with his quarterback of what, 3 years, 3.5 years from LSU.
Right.
So, I mean, they've had chemistry for the last 3.5 years, going into year 4 together in the league, year 1 together in the league, and they picked up right where they started.
Yeah,
where they left off.
Definitely doesn't make you feel good as a Ravens fan. You know, the last 10 years it was Andy Dalton, AJ Green, and now it's going to be Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase. You just hope that Marlon can rebound here from his worst statistical performance as a pro. I want to backtrack though, and I think this is going to go unnoticed for a while. But because it was only four games. It was such a small sample size, and really the biggest problem early in the year from the 2019 year, the 14-2 year, Lamar's MVP year, was the running defense the first 4 weeks. But Marlon had an awful first four games before they brought Marcus Peters in that trade with the Rams. And after that, you know, Marlon played a little bit better. Do you think that it has, is it the psychological aspects of going up against the number one receiver every week? I mean, last week he shadowed Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. This week it's Ja'Marr Chase. Week before that, it was Michael Pittman, I believe he was shadowing. Point is, he's been playing some, you know, top tier talent, and is it just, you know, the safeties aren't that strong? You know, Deshaun Elliott was out. Is there chemistry missing there? I mean, why do you think a rookie receiver used him like a old dish rag yesterday? Is really the question.
Well, so a big part of it is we've already discussed this, and Marlon's doo-doo in the main. He's like, I don't want to say, what's the guy from Seattle? He's playing with Brady and the Bucks now. Richard Sherman 2.0. But Richard Sherman was terrible in Maine. Great in the zone. And great, you know, big physical, tall corner. And he was smart, you know, the same thing that Marlon has going on for him. But just in man, that just never has been his game. So you mentioned the 2019 season when we picked up Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters became that guy that shadowed the number one receiver in man. And, you know, Marlon would be in the slot or in the number two receiver, and just being able to have that weight off your shoulders, I think, definitely helped his game. Because let's not forget, Marcus Peters came in and picked up right where he left off from when he was in LA, and he, you know, had a Pro Bowl year that year. So I definitely do think, and that was partially because we were playing to his strengths, you know, being able to sit in man, jam people right off the line and keep up with them, because
playing a lot of cover zero and just sending everybody, so you need to have good man corners on the back end.
Exactly, and I mean, again, Anthony Avery. He had some moments, but definitely was improved from, you know, games prior. But I think Marlon Humphrey just definitely got exposed. This guy, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is running 4.3s. You know, he's not big by any you know, means of the word at all. He's pretty compact, but just that speed, man, it kills.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched. It's difficult to find words. I just never thought that. I mean, I picked Baltimore to win this game 35-14. I really didn't believe in the Bengals. I thought we were going to be able to throw some different looks and confuse Joe Burrow, do some different things up front, get some pressure on him. We did get pressure on him. That's for sure. But he's able to climb the pocket, and his receivers are just getting wide open. And then so many blown coverages, like late down the stretch. The second C.J. Uzomah touchdown that he caught, four defenders cover the flat and leave him right up the seam. And Deshaun Elliott is like, what in the hell is, you know, he fans on the tackle. And then I don't know. It's so many different things. It's just like we said last week with the Chargers game. It's difficult to narrow it down to an individual performance in that win. It was a collective great team win. Exact opposite this week. They just sucked as a team. The tackling, I mean, we're in week 7, dude. Like, this shit has got to get fixed. Like, for a Baltimore Ravens team that can't tackle? They can't tackle. I've never seen it before. Like, what is going on up there? Is it something in the water that they changed this year or what?
Yeah, same thing I was saying, man. It's new identity Ravens. It's not the same Ravens that we are used to.
But how? Like, yes, I understand LJ Fort is out. Marcus Peters is out. But Patrick Queen has obviously regressed this year. I mean, yeah, and Derek Wolfe is out, you know, but Justin Madubuike has been stepping up and he's been playing well. I don't understand how they've forgotten how to play fundamental football. It's so weird. I mean, they've been a top five defense or top 10 defense for 10 straight years. Like, how do you not know how to tackle?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know what Wink's preaching over there, but I'm pretty sure it's just get turnovers because, I mean, that's the one thing. Marlon's so worried about punching the ball out that he doesn't wrap up at all.
No, anymore. He doesn't. And it's infected the rest of the team, I've noticed, that mentality.
They're all just whiffing, you know, not wrapping up. And this is like fundamentals, day one peewee football that, you know, these guys are getting paid to make these plays, and you know it looks bad, but then you know this week it's 1 week. I mean, we can't jump to, you know, conclusions here, but I mean, what, coming into this game we had the number 3 overall defense in rushing, but like 27th in passing though. So
and bottled up Joe Mixon for the majority of the game. I thought that was pleasing to see. You know, Joe Mixon was. He's towards the top. I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but he was certainly towards the top in terms of yards this season. And of course, he bounced the one, and then P. Ryan bounced the other one late in the game. I just thought there was an awful lot of quit out there in that fourth quarter after, you know, they get the ball back on offense. They're driving. It's a fourth down. They come out of a timeout 3 straight. The Bengals called a timeout, and then they get 3 straight false start penalties. Like,
yeah, man, it's pretty atrocious, I'm not gonna lie. And again, tough to watch, but I think, like I said, this bye couldn't have come soon enough. Just for one, for a morale boost, and two, to, you know, hopefully get some folks back to full potential and full health, I guess. Going into another week after the bye.
Yeah, so. And I think John Harbaugh is. I don't have the stats in front of me. I should have grabbed him for this podcast, but he's damn good off of a bye. So, and it's going to be at home coming off of this loss with 2 weeks to think about it and prepare from it. I think the team's going to get a little bit healthier. So it's positive. And listen, if anybody told me after J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Marcus Peters, the entire team was injured the last week of training camp right before the season started, that we were going to be 5-2 at the bye, I'd say, yep, I'd absolutely 100% take that. It's a little bit tougher to swallow after a blowout loss to the Bengals at home. But they obviously, you can't take anything away from them. That's not the same Bengals that everybody's used to being able to roll over. They went out and did a bunch of good things for that team defensively. Their pass rush is legit. Joe Burrow is that dude. Jamar Chase is, without a doubt, offensive rookie of the year. Like, just go ahead and give him the award now.
you had to see it in person.
There's just nothing. You know, it's an impressive football team. So, I'm not convinced that the Bengals are going to win the division. No, I think this is a historically bad game for the Ravens. But this week they won, so you shake their hand, and you know we'll see them again. It's just as a Ravens fan, that's not the type of performance that you want to see. I sat here on the pod last week and said, you know, I thought this Chargers win was going to catapult this team, and they finally found something on all phases, and they're finally clicking on all cylinders, and they fell right on their face. So I mean. We'll see what happens moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, coming off the bye, we got Minnesota, so that'll be another test for the passing game and for the, you know, stopping the run, because I believe they're coming off a bye this week.
Correct.
So, you know, they got fresh legs going into this weekend, but yeah, definitely
test. Yeah, I'll definitely. I think this will be this weekend will be the first Vikings game I actually sit down and try to watch. So anyway, well, yeah, I mean, all in all, I think obviously, they left a lot out there on both sides of the ball. Left a lot to be desired, but I don't think. I mean, I think my panic meter right now, I'm more frustrated than I am panicked. I think this team's going to be able to get this straight. John Harbaugh is going to utilize this bye. The entire team is going to use the utilize this bye quite well. I think this is a good little piece of humble pie for him. You know, it's nice to kind of take these punches. But you know, obviously 6-1 would have been really good. But looking at their schedule after the bye, they got Vikings Thursday night in Miami, and then at Chicago the following week. So it's looking like this, at least the schedule is hopefully in their favor for 8-2 before they get into their gauntlet stretch of the Browns, Steelers, Browns. So we'll see that, and that's exactly where they needed to be, getting into that the last stretch of those games. They needed to be right about 8-2, because the end of their schedule gets really difficult. So I think they're on pace to, obviously they're on pace to do that, but I think they have a damn good shot of getting there and being 8-2 when the real meat of their schedule late comes in.
Definitely.
So want to take a look around the AFC. So question, would you rather be this morning, would you rather be Baltimore waking up getting trounced at home, or would you rather be Kansas City waking up getting blown out by the Titans?
I'd much rather be Baltimore getting beat at home.
What an embarrassing display. They are not good at football this year. Like, what happened?
I mean, honestly, it's the same thing that's going to happen with us if we don't. I can't even say they don't have weapons. Their defense is just god-awful. That's just
god-awful. God-awful.
And, like, this was the year everyone was supposed to figure out Lamar. I think it's the other way around. They figured out Pat Mahomes. If you can cover Pat Mahomes' receivers for more than 5 seconds, you got him figured out.
I agree. Because
he can't just chuck it to Tyreek, you know, 90 yards down the field.
I agree.
In a lot of the situations. But, I mean, it was a very convincing win on the other side with Tennessee, because Tennessee owed him one. After, because didn't they have a playoff loss to Tennessee or to KC?
Yeah, it was 2019. It was 2019, yeah. The year that they made the AFC Championship game, Kansas City. And they were up in that game, too, and Kansas City battled back, ended up winning that game. They won the Super Bowl that year. But I don't know. I think it's actually kind of funny. Ronnie Stanley goes down last year. Orlando Brown shifts over, and he had a phenomenal year. He had a Pro Bowl year. I can't take anything away from him, but he sends that tweet that, you know, he is a left tackle. And obviously that's when, you know, the storm kind of started. Well, he's saying that he wants to be paid left tackle money, and you know, the Ravens aren't going to pay him left tackle money to play him at right tackle. And, you know, he's filling a lifelong dream that he and his dad had, playing left tackle in the NFL. You know, he's third at his position in terms of pressures this year.
It's a new stat for me.
Like, I don't know if it's a scheme thing, or, you know, he's coming from a run heavy offense to a pass heavy offense. I want to say you and I had a conversation briefly about him after the Ronnie Stanley injury last year, and you actually brought up the point that he wasn't the greatest in pass protection. I think a lot of it was hidden because it was such a run heavy offense, the 2019, 2020, mm-hmm. You know, the post Lamar Jackson era, which is obviously the only time he's been in Baltimore, but it's actually, you know, I mean, Kansas City kind of lost that trade, don't you think? I mean, they gave up their first-round pick. We get Odafe Owe, who's lighting it up on the defensive side for us, and they get Orlando Brown, who can't cover his nose. Like, what? It's just...
Well, yeah, I mean, you move him from one scheme where he had a lot of success, and again, this is a run-heavy scheme here in Baltimore, it was, at that point in time, to a pass-heavy scheme. And, I mean, what are you expecting at that point? I mean, you know, what is it? Oil and water don't mix. It's just what it is. I mean, he's not, a pass protecting tackle.
Right.
I mean, move him to left tackle, it does not matter. You put him on that weak side, it's even scarier. I mean, Pat Mahomes has probably got a broken collarbone at this point. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was, like you said, a blessing in disguise for us because we started passing the ball so much more now and being a little bit more effective when Lamar is not sailing every ball or every other ball. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know at this point who I would rather have, Villanueva getting beat out there or Zeus Jr. getting beat out there on the right side.
I mean, so. I think for me it would be Zeus Jr. I think he's had more years of success in that scheme. And he's younger, but I think Alejandro Villanueva has played well. Obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement there, but I think it's, you know, if the panic meter for me right now is about at a 3 for the Ravens, it's got to be damn near 10 if you're a Kansas City fan, don't you think? I mean, they can't stop anything, nothing. Like,
yep, and that's their downside right now. They're going to have a lot of issues if they plan on playing any playoff football this postseason, because it's just going to be like a high-powered offense and a dookie-shoot defense, you know?
Right, so. And that's the thing is, last week I said Derrick Henry was going to break the, you know, the single-game rushing record against the Chiefs, and that didn't happen. They can't do anything. They can't do anything defensively. They have the worst turnover differential in the league, and which is, I think, what's it now? Patrick Mahomes has thrown an interception in 6 straight games, or is it 5 straight games, and he's had a turnover in 6 straight games or something like that?
Yeah, he has 14 picks on the year, I think, right? 13 or 14?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for every touchdown he's throwing a pick. So, I mean, you know, it's bad when you look at it. I mean, and then last week or yesterday he got knocked out of the game.
Oh, so. My Lord. I thought he died. I really did. Kwesi, I don't know if you saw it. Of course, I didn't see it in real time. I saw it on the playback. But when his head snapped back like that and he was laying on the ground, I thought he had broken his neck. I thought he was dead. Which was, I mean, it was a very scary situation. I'm glad he's okay. But it was like, good Lord, this is, and not only that, I mean, he took some vicious hits. Like and that's what's interesting is like the Titans, now they always play the Chiefs tough,
but yeah.
There's nothing really special about their pass rush. Their secondary is just bad, and they were missing 4 of their top 7 guys. One of them had a season-ending injury last week in the Buffalo Monday night game. So I don't know. I think the, you know, again, here we are again. How are you going to fix this if you're Kansas City? I don't know. I don't know if you really can.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Big Red's I don't know. I don't know if he's hitting the panic button quite yet, but he definitely, with Mahomes getting hurt, and them sitting at 3-4 and 3rd in their division right now, it's kind of scary. I'm sorry. I'm looking back at that hit on Mahomes, and yeah, bro, it did not look
good. No, dude, it did not. Not at all.
Limp for a second. What did he ran into another lineman, I think?
He was getting tackled from the back, and another defensive lineman was coming up front, and his face mask hits the guy in like the thigh or something. It just wrenches his head back. I mean, it was pretty brutal. If you watch it in real time, you know, the way his head snaps back like that, I mean, it was scary to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the way he lays there, like I was just like, you know, he's not all right. Like,
no, yeah.
You know, he cleared concussion protocol, and Big Red was just like, no, you almost just lost your head. We're gonna go ahead and sit you on the bench and just ride this one out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because just looking back also at the stats for that game, Derrick Henry, I mean, he had 29 carries on 89 yards or 86 yards. He did have a passing touchdown, but that's, you know, that was because everyone was expecting him to run that in, what, second and three on the goal
Right.
line. So, I mean, Henry wasn't really a factor in the running game, if you ask me. I mean, he's averaging 3 yards a carry, which is very Derrick Henry-esque, but again, he didn't have 340 yards
yeah,
and, you know,
but,
10 carries.
I mean, you kind of just alluded to it, though. You know, he's, if you just look at the box score, you're going to say, you know, Derrick Henry didn't have a great game. But, I mean, he threw a touchdown because the direct snap, the snap came directly to him. Everybody crashed the line, and he just shot puts it over the top to the wide open receiver in the back. It's the same play they ran against the Ravens in the playoff game in 2019.
Yeah,
you know, everybody sold out to stop the run. So okay, well, if you're gonna do that, and then on the end around the rushing touchdown that Ryan Tannehill scored, there's nobody on that side of the field except for the cornerback covering the receiver that's over there. Like, nobody yeah. thought Ryan Tannehill was going to take that ball. He just walked into the end zone. Like, that's the thing. Like, Derrick Henry, even when he doesn't have the ball, he has so much gravity pulling everybody towards him just because, I mean, he's a game wrecker. He's a home run hitter. You have to respect it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Generational talent.
For sure.
Seriously.
So, let's break off here a little bit into some playoff predictions here at the end of week 7. I do have a change. I've still got the Bills winning the AFC East. I've got the Titans still winning the AFC South. However, I don't think that they're the best team in their division. And we said this, both of us said this after week 5, our first episode. I think the Colts are about ready to rip off a bunch of wins here, but their schedule does get tough. They have to play the Buccaneers, Titans. They have to play I think the Colts are better than the Titans, but they have to play the Buccaneers, they have to play the Cardinals, and they have to play the Bills. I think those are 3 losses on the Colts' schedule right now, and they're not going to win that division at 10-7. Right now, the Titans are 5-2. But I think the Colts have found something here, and I think they're the best team in that division. They just dug themselves a hole. I've got the Chargers winning the AFC West, and I've actually got the Bengals winning the AFC North. I don't see how. Yes, I understand that it was a historically poor game for the Ravens. I don't see how, you know, October 25th, while we're recording this podcast here, I can say that the Ravens with any confidence are going to beat the Bengals. I think there's an awful lot of question marks with this football team, and there's not many with the Bengals, but we'll see how it shakes out. I do think the Ravens will get a wild card spot, and I think the Raiders will be in, and I also think that the Colts will be in for the third wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my predictions, I'm still pretty static with the ones that I initially picked. With Buffalo out of the AFC East, remember I told you the AFC West, I either had KC or Las Vegas still, even without John Gruden, and they're number one in the AFC West right now.
Yeah.
The North, I'm still gonna go with us. I'm not sold. I mean, I know we just got kicked in the mouth by Cincy at home. But one, November's our month. Harbaugh led team does not lose in November. So I think we make a big stretch coming off our bye and going through the month of November. And then I'm excited to see the rematch with us.
Oh, me too.
Christmas and the Bengals.
Oh, me too. Yeah, that's gonna be a big one, I think.
Yeah, back for blood, man. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as the same outcome or result that we had this week. Out of the South, I still have Tennessee coming out of there. I mean, yes, the Colts have came alive, and thank God they have at this point in time. I mean, they have Tennessee this week, New York Jets, the following, the Jags, and then the Bills. So I feel like their first 2 tests will be, of course, Tennessee this week and then the Bills in late November. And then right after that, they got the Brady Bunch. the following week after Thanksgiving. So, I mean, I think out of their first, their next four games, they'll probably win two of them. I don't have them beating Tennessee just because of the style of football they're playing right now. To be honest with you, and of course, I don't have them beating Buffalo. In Buffalo. So
yeah, no, definitely not. They're not going to be Buffalo in Buffalo. I want to ask you, though, real quick about the Browns. Sorry, were you done with I think I just cut you off there. My fault.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I mean, I was just going to go back and finish up the AFC North for us.
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as playoff implications, I still got us finishing first, Bengals second, and then the rest is really doesn't matter anymore.
Anyway, so you think the Browns are pretty much done? That's where I was going to go with my question.
I mean, they've got Pittsburgh this week. Who the Bengals the following week? Patriots and Lions.
I'll have to look at their. I'll have to look at their schedule. They've got Steelers this week, then at the Bengals, at the Patriots,
then in Foxborough.
Yeah,
then back in Cleveland with the
Detroit. Yeah, and then they go. I mean, they go in Baltimore. Then they have a bye. Then they go home for Baltimore. Yeah. I think it all comes down to Baker Mayfield right now. I think he's hurting his team by being out there. I mean, it comes out last week after the Cardinal game that he's got a fracture in that left shoulder now that's preventing his rotator cuff from doing something. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but it seems that, you know, Case Keenum played well enough, I thought, against the Broncos. You know, they still have a great offensive line. If Nick Chubb can get healthy, D'Ernest Johnson played really well. Had a career game Thursday night against Denver in Denver. They squeaked out of there with a win. I don't think that the Steelers really pose much of a threat. I still think that the Browns have some big question marks back there in the secondary, but that defensive front is no joke with Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett. I think, and it's no different from where we were at the beginning of the season. Obviously, the circumstances are a bit different. I didn't think that Baker Mayfield was going to be able to win this division just for the simple fact that he's Baker Mayfield, but I think now he won't be able to do it because his shoulder's jacked up. And I admire your grit and your determination to get out there and play for your team, but at a certain point, if you're hurt, you're hurting your squad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing I'm thinking here too. I mean, honestly, I mean, we had the conversation about Baker and who he really is, and you know how I already felt about him. I mean, the kid just isn't it, in my opinion. And then on top of that, with his two, you know, studs of running backs that are down because of injuries. Don't get me wrong. You know, the guy who stepped up in the Thursday night game, who had the career game, who was the feel good story of the year. You know, did his thing, but he's certainly no Nick Chubb or
Kareem Hunt.
Kareem Hunt, sorry, yeah. So, I mean, I honestly, I'm still not sold. I mean, I feel like the Browns right now are looking, I wouldn't say they're going to tank, but they're looking at finding OBJ's replacement at the end of this season at this point with the draft or something like that. So, I mean, we'll see where
they trade push him this week?
Nah.
Yeah, with these injuries piling up, I don't think they can.
They couldn't afford to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're deep. I think they'll take them and, you know, keep them there through the end of the season and then, you know, not sign them next year.
I mean,
re-sign them next year.
I definitely don't think that their season is over. I mean, they kind of go through a gauntlet stretch there after the Detroit game. They got the Ravens twice, then they're playing the Raiders, the Packers, the Steelers, and the Bengals again. So their schedule ends really tough. Granted, they go Ravens by Ravens, but, you know, the Raiders ain't going to be no cakewalk, neither the Packers. Steelers always play them tough, and the Bengals, you know, we just got finished talking about them. So they definitely don't have and I mean, you're going to have to be 100%. Now, they certainly don't have as many people on IR as the Ravens do, but they've certainly got their fair share of injuries that they're dealing with, though.
Very true. Very true.
But so I want to shift gears here again. You know, we're getting into the last 15 minutes here, last quarter of the show. You know, usually this is the section that we keep reserved for, you know, the week ahead, the game ahead, you know, a little bit of preview into that. But obviously we don't have a game on Sunday. It's the bye week. So I want to talk about some moves that that you want to see him make. You know, right now for me, I just think that there's a lot of questions really with the entire team. I think priority number one is the run game. I think these practice squad running backs and cycling them out at the frequency that they do is not helping anything. I think they got to go, you're my number one back, you're my number two back, you're going to be my little scat back, you know, Justice Hill type guy, and run the offense that way. What do you think?
So I think they already had that established with, you know, the backs that we do have. It just was unfortunate that Latavius Murray got hurt. I think Le'Veon Bell still carries a lot of weight just off of his name, but dude, like, he needs to go back to the practice squad or be relegated to the third back and let Tyson Williams touch the ball more, man. I don't understand. Like, he had a great preseason, had a great few games or whatever, and, you know, with the acquisition of Le'Veon, they kind of just, you know, got rid of him, just took him out of the game plan altogether. I don't know what's going on with him, if it's like a practice thing or
well,
what.
Well, I think it's that might be a little bit misleading. So I don't mean to cut you off again, but just before I really forgot my point was, he's missed a few assignments and pass protection, and he has had a couple fumbles. Now, they haven't been detrimental. One was in the Raiders game. He fumbled it out of bounds. The second one was in the Chiefs game. Devin Duvernay scooped that up and fell into the end zone. So they obviously haven't been detrimental. But he has missed blocking assignments, and he's got a little bit of a fumbling kind of issue. Now, I don't necessarily think that means they should be taking touches away from him and giving him to Le'Veon Bell. Like, I'm joining you in that boat. I think Le'Veon Bell's time.
I need you to say that out loud. Yeah. I'm sorry. I need you to say that out loud.
I think Le'Veon Bell's best years are, well, I knew that. I knew his best years were certainly behind him. I just didn't think it would quite be this bad. What do you think about Marlon Mack, though?
I mean, I would flip. I know you're saying go for a running back, but I honestly would not go for a running back because I know Latavius Murray isn't out indefinitely, so I know he's going to come back. I like Mack as a spell.
That's fair.
To Murray, because he's just sitting there collecting dust in Indy anyway. But I would go defensive, honestly.
And, really?
Shore up another man corner or somebody that can.
Even with Chris Westry coming back?
I mean, he's coming back off an injury, so there's still a lot to prove there. He was someone before the injury.
Yeah, well, so is Nick Boyle. Nick Boyle's coming off of a much worse injury than...
Gruesome. But Nick Boyle's bread and butter is blocking first and then receiving. So, I mean, you know, on the edge, he shows up a lot of the blocking efforts, but they've been moving Ricard around a lot. I mean, he missed quite a few blocks.
Yeah, Trey Hendrickson
yesterday.
Had his way with him on a couple of those plays yesterday. But that Trey Hendrickson's one of the best pass rushers in
pass
the league.
Rushers.
So
exactly.
I can't really hold that against him too much.
But, I mean, like I said, I still would go after a defensive player because I feel like we're struggling there much more than we are on the offensive side. I think the offense will work itself out. The defense, on the other hand, is like, it's hit or miss. We've only had one really convincing game, and that was, to me, and that was against LA.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Without a doubt, that's absolutely their, you know, the best team performance, you know, whereas nobody really popped off the page. You know, I always like seeing Lamar throw for 450 yards and, you know, say F the haters and move on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Lamar, for me, though, like Lamar, because he's so versatile, I mean, I don't mind him throwing 450 and rushing for 90 yards in a win. I mean, that's total yards. That's plays being made. That's games being won.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. What do you think of this Collins guy from Dallas, the guy that tried to pay off that drug test collector. He's a right tackle.
Oh, Leo?
Huh?
Leo Collins? There you go.
That's I was tripping over his first name. I couldn't remember what his first name was. What do you think about maybe potentially trying to go out and get him, shore up this offensive line here a little bit, especially with McCary going down? I don't want to see Tyree Phillips playing right tackle this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's been pretty injury prone himself. I think last year he had like a leg, lower leg or hip injury or something like that that caused him to miss all of last season, maybe a good amount of last season. Because he went down shortly after, I believe, Dak went down last year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, of course, we're talking football. It's a physical game, but I wouldn't go out and sign another injury-prone guy if I just got a guy, you know, one of my starters went on the IR. But, again, I think my focus, and this is just me, again, typical. This is typical Ravens fans. Solidify the defense first. Honestly, I think as long as Lamar stays healthy, the offense will have their way for the most part. I still could see the concern with shoring up the offensive line, but I honestly don't think it'll get much better than it is right now. Whereas on the defensive side, I feel like we have way too many holes, man.
Yeah, so I want to pose this question here, and it's going to kind of segue me into my next point here in this segment. But do you think it's a personnel issue, or do you think it's a execution, maybe coaching issue with the defense right now at this point?
A little bit of both. So Wink has gotten out of, you know, cover zero 90% of the time because we're actually getting edge rush, you know, with Owe, Houston, Matabuke when he's lined up in that weird nose flex position. Right. So, you know, I think it's been personnel, yes. And I won't say at the first two levels. I'll definitely say in the secondary. It seems like everyone's had their game in our secondary at this point. Tae Young had the, you know, the unsportsmanlike that almost cost us the game. What was that? Against Indy. You know, not Indy. Man, who am I thinking of?
No, you're right. It was. It was against Jack Doyle. Where Jack Doyle pushes his head down and... Yeah, you're right.
Dirt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that, I mean, that whole game, Anthony Averett's getting used. Marlon's giving up touchdowns against, you know, Jamar Chase, of course, and the Bengals. The Las Vegas game, you know. And so everyone's had their game in our secondary, it seems like. Everyone. But it seemed like I said, the first two levels, and you can even say that about Patrick Queen as well. Pretty much every game that he has to cover anything besides his nose. He just, again, we've talked about him just, you know, going at 1,000 miles an hour and just messing up,
washing himself out
and
of just place,
running past, running past and running out of play. So, and you know, Jimmy's had his game. Everyone in our secondary, like I said, has had their game. And I mean, I think again, personnel is a, you know, big part to it. I mean, because like you mentioned earlier with Marlon. In 2019, his first four games were the worst games of this season until, you know, we went out and got Marcus Peters. I think it's kind of like the same situation where we need that one guy that's, I don't want to say oblong, but just doesn't fit but fits at the same time. Because, you know, a lot of our scheme in 19 was zone. But we bring in a man guy and boom, our secondary moves up to number two, or our defense moves up to number two in the league that year, or finishes number two or three in the league that year. So, I mean... and then again, the play calling on both sides of the ball is very questionable at times, very questionable. But, you know, we're muscling through it. It's week seven, or we're going through week seven, and I think we'll be fine going towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think right now the Ravens are kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. You know, obviously, I don't think the cornerback situation is going to be a problem moving forward. Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey are both under contract. Maybe you bring in a guy because I think this year is the last year of Averett's rookie deal. So, you know, with them paying Lamar Jackson, he might be a cap casualty. So maybe you go out and get a corner or something like that that might still be on their rookie deal that you can keep as kind of that, you know, for a rainy day type of situation. But it's just difficult because if you go out and get a running back, like, I don't expect Latavius Murray, Devontae Freeman, or Le'Veon Bell to be on the Ravens next year. You know, they don't need these players long term. They need them for the next 10 games to get to where they're trying to get to in the season. So it's difficult for me. I think that protection has been the biggest problem. Well, the run game and protection for me kind of go hand in hand. I don't think we can really block for the run game right now. And that's kind of playing off of it. I do agree with you. I think, you know, Latavius Murray needs to be the one. Devontae Freeman needs to be the two. Le'Veon Bell can kind of do, and Tyson Williams can kind of do, you know, whatever. I think they need to be getting the primary bulk of the carries out of the backfield here moving forward out after the bye. I just, right now, I think there's still a lot of questions. There's more questions with the Ravens team than I'm comfortable with coming into week 8 that I really need them to get fixed this bye, which I'm sure they will. You know, as I said earlier in the show, as you said, you know, John Harbaugh led teams in November are solid teams, difficult to beat teams. They are every year, but you know, it seems that they don't lose a lot of games in November. But tackling, coverage, and pressure is consistent, but it looks old. Justin Houston beat the left tackle for the Bengals yesterday up and down that field, but he could not get to Burrow before Burrow got rid of the ball. Credit to the receivers that he has, Ja'Marr Chase getting wide open and taking 2-yard slant routes and turning them into 80-yard touchdowns. But just a lot of question marks right now. Kind of hard for me to narrow it down to one thing, but I'm certainly confident that the Ravens will get it right and still be in the conversation at the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised for them to come out of this bye week, get a little bit healthier. I think you're right. I think this is a, you know, I was looking at preseason, I'm looking at the bye, I'm like, damn, you know, in a 17-week season, week 8 is pretty early. You know, you go from a decent bye, you know, you'd certainly like, you know, a later in the year bye. But a 16-game season, you know, you're right in the middle of the week. You can't really complain with that. Now there's that extra game. So it's like, well, shit, we're still in the first part of the year here with this bye. But in terms of looking at the big picture, 5-game win streak, they're 5-2, get a little bit healthy, kind of reset, you know, refocus themselves to make a stretch here, make a run. And you're absolutely right. I'm really looking forward. I've circled December 26th on my calendar. I'm really looking forward to that rematch in Cincinnati. You know, today I'll pick the Bengals to win the AFC North, but that might not be the same here in a couple weeks. So I think you got to give credit to the Bengals here for the performance that they put in at the bank Sunday, and we'll see where the dust settles when it does.
Yeah, man, I just want to mention one last thing. I agree with you, but Joe Flacco going to the Jets
yeah,
to
take over. Boy, Zach Wilson must be hurt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's going
through. They're calling on the savvy vet. That ain't never good.
Yeah, he traded him for a 6th-round pick.
Ooh, a conditional 6th-round, I think, depending on Joe Flacco's playing time. That's
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
A lot of confidence.
A lot of confidence. Yep, that's right. All right, well, I think we've reached the end here, this week 7 episode of the JK No Dobbins Show. Thank you guys so much for making us a part of your day. Enjoy the bye, and we'll talk to you next week. You got anything else there, Mr. Quasey?
No, sir. We'll see you next week, guys.
All right, have a good one. Appreciate it.